Accession number 30400, Mr. Ralph Main, Real One. Can you tell me where and when you were born, Mr. Main?
25th of the 5th, 1931, Portsmouth.
And could you tell us a bit about, you know, your family background? You were in the Portsmouth area, were you?
We were in the Portsmouth area. We moved just north of Portsmouth to a village called Kelp Lane.
Called what?
Kelp Lane.
Do you mind how you spell that?
C-O-W, then Plain, P-L-A-I-N.
And can you tell us a bit, you know, what your dad did for a living, what family life was like?
Well, four generations back, they were all Navy. They were doing, you know, the Far East, Mediterranean, or that kind of thing. I haven't traced them any further back than that, though.
So your father was in the Navy?
Father, grandfather. Oh, my great-grandfather was a shipwright in Portsmouth Dockyard, and his father was a mariner. But that's as far back as I can go.
Now, tell us a bit, what was like, how many were in the family?
I had a brother and sister. There's three of us.
And what was life like growing up? Well, first Portsmouth and then Kelp Lane.
Well, Portsmouth I didn't realise, didn't know anything about, because by the time we moved to Kelp Lane, I was too young to remember Portsmouth. But Kelp Lane was country then, and it's for a child, you know, it was lovely. You had the woods and anything you wanted to do.
Was your father still in the Navy?
My father got invalided at the Navy in the first year of the war with TB. But he only had part-time jobs after that.
Did the family struggle under those circumstances?
A bit, yes.
What was he working as?
Well, he worked as maybe a cleaner or some small job like that. But during the end of the war, he had a job at Cosham, where the airfield used to be.
Second World War. Right, okay. When did he left the Navy?
He left the Navy, he was invalided out of the Navy about 1940-41.
Right, so when you were about nine?
Nine, yeah.
Were you away a lot then, from your first part?
No, I don't think so.
So he wasn't serving overseas then?
He wasn't serving overseas then, no.
Now, what about your education? Had you started school before the war broke out?
I started school, I think, about the end of the war. I'm not sure now, really. I used to go to Hartwood called Hart Plain Avenue School in Kelp Lane. That's the one I remember most.
And how did you do at school? What do you remember about your education?
I can't remember a lot about it. I remember the teachers and a couple of the teachers in that way, but not a lot. The end of the war, 1944, we moved up to London. So, you know,
what, from Kelp Lane to London?
Kelp Lane to London, yeah.
So that's 44?
That was 44, yeah. Last year of the war.
45 was last year of the war.
Yeah, we moved up in 44, yeah.
Now, we sort of ask about, how did the war affect your life? I know you were very young, but I mean, it's things like, did you remember it starting? I mean, you'd only be eight.
I don't remember it starting, but I remember it when we had all the troops alongside the road where we lived, because they were put there to waterproof the vehicles prior to going into the water when they landed.
So that was the preparations for D-Day?
The preparations for D-Day, yes. I remember that, all that part of it.
Did you see much of the troops? You know what?
A lot of them, yes. Tanks, lorries, everything, bring gun carriers.
What was the atmosphere like in those weeks, months before D-Day?
I don't know. I don't know what atmosphere was like. You know, it was very busy for them. And a lot of them, as they left, they threw away their loose change to the children along the road. As much as they say, you know, I won't need it over there, get rid of it. But I think it was a good time.
What about air raid precautions? Did you have a shelter in Kelp Lane?
There was a shelter in the middle of the crescent where we lived. There was four brick ones.
What were they like? Could you describe them?
Well, they were all above ground, nothing underneath. They were just brick with bunks inside for each house that was on there.
Did they have one of those thick concrete roofs, a flat concrete roof? Or
I don't remember what the roof was like.
What was it like in there when you were in there as a child?
Pretty cold and dark.
So not particularly pleasant?
Not particularly pleasant, no.
Do you remember the blackout, how your mother did it? Or
yes, we had shutters up at the windows. But that's about it. We had a warden walk around now and again, you know, just to make sure that everything, you know, was all right and no lights were showing. But that's about it.
Did you understand the importance of the blackout as a child?
Yeah, we understood, because you had lots of planes going over and bombing on Portsmouth Harbour.
Now, tell me about the air raids. I know you're only just outside Portsmouth, aren't you? What was it like during the air raid?
Well, we could sit more or less south downhill and we could watch them dive bombing on Portsmouth Harbour or across the Thorny Island where the airfield was. And they used to shoot down the barrage balloons as well.
And you could see all that?
We could see that, yes.
And what was it like? I mean, you actually...
We could see it all going on, but really, being far away from it, it meant nothing to us. You knew what they were doing, but not the effect down below.
There were no raids on Cowplane?
There was no raids, no. There was the odd landmine or a crash plane a little far away. Well, there were several crash planes. But there was a couple of landmines, but that was about it.
Did the landmines do much damage in the village?
Well, not in the village, you know, because they landed in the woods.
Oh,
landmines
behind,
in the woods. Yeah. Yeah, they landed in the woods.
And anything else about the... I think the best thing to go on to is rationing, you know, because that would have affected you as a child. Do you remember the food and sweet rationing?
Remember the food and sweet rationing, yes. And the best thing I remember is when we first ate some jam, and then blackcurrant jam, and I thought it was marvellous.
Did you miss sweets and the things like that?
No, I don't think so, because we didn't get a lot of them in the beginning anyway. But we didn't really miss them.
What about clothes rationing?
Clothes rationing? I don't remember really about clothes rationing. I know we had clothes, but how they were gotten, that fact,
that
I don't know.
Your mother sorted that out for you?
Yeah, she sorted all that out, yes.
Now, when you moved to London, how did that affect you? You moved there in the last year of the war.
There were
still V1s and V2s.
There were V1s and V2s still,
now,
yes.
What do you remember of those things?
I remember the V2s, you'd hear them go over and then you hear the engine stop and you knew there was going to be a bang afterwards. But with the V2s, you just saw a trail in the sky and then nothing. You just heard the bang afterwards.
Any close escapes or was it
no,
all?
No, nothing. We lived at Harrow Road, Prince of Wales Way. But nothing near us.
And... as a child, did you follow? I mean, I know you're only a kid, and you were what? You were 8 to 13 ish, you know, 12.
Yeah.
Did you follow the progress of the war, either at school or on the radio or in the cinema, you know, in the newsroom?
Well, you used to get some news of it from the school, you know, what was going on, any big things, but other than that, no.
So you wouldn't hear the radio broadcast or anything like that?
No, we didn't usually listen to the radio a lot. Being youngsters, we used to be out somewhere.
So what were your amusements like? How did you spend your free time?
Maybe a bit of fishing. Don't know, a bit of sport, maybe a bit of football, kicking the football around in the recreation ground, or a bit of cricket, but that's about it.
Not that organised sport?
Not that organised sport, no.
Any street parties at the end of the war in London? Or
there were street parties, but I don't remember a lot about them. There wasn't one in our street, because it was a main road going down, but in some of the side streets there were parties.
Now, so after the war, how did your education progress in London? I mean, you know, just at 14.
14, I left school at 14 and went to work for Roots.
So that's 1945, almost.
Yeah.
Now, what were you going to go and work at Roots?
Trying to learn engineering.
Were you actually an apprentice?
No, I didn't take an apprenticeship, no.
So what were you learning?
Learning stripping engines and coachworks after that.
What would they call you, a fitter?
I don't know, a fitter or a learner, I suppose.
And did you enjoy the work?
Yes, it was quite all right. But I left and had lots of little jobs after that until I went to the Merchant Navy.
So, how long were you doing these bits and pieces jobs?
Oh, I think about a couple of years, I suppose. But I went to the Merchant Navy when I was about 16.
So that would be 1947.
Seven, yeah.
Now, why the Merchant Navy? Was this just this family thing?
I think a bit of it was, yes. I went to volunteer for the Navy, but they wanted all sorts of have you been in trouble and God knows what and can you prove this and that, and I forgot it in the end and went to the Merchant Navy. I went to the sea trainer school at Gravesend.
Now, has it got a name or is it just a sea training school?
It's not there now, but it was a sea training school at Gravesend.
And what was the sea training school? I mean, what was the
setup
there?
They taught you the waiting and that sort of thing and a bit of seamanship. They went as a steward.
Oh, you learned it?
Went as a steward.
And why a steward?
First of all, they took me more or less as cabin boy, you know, with odd jobs. But when I came out the army, I went back into the Merchant Navy as a steward on the P&O boats to Australia.
So that was going to be your career. Did you enjoy it at the sea training school? I mean, what exactly were they teaching you? What is it to learn about stewarding?
Yeah. well, how do I table, what wines went with what, and they taught you a bit about boats and that sort of thing. But other than that, there wasn't a lot. There was only on 3 months there, and then they sent you off to the seamen's mission at one of the dockyards to get a ship.
Now, which ship were you? Did you get a ship straight away, or?
You get a ship straight away. It was only in those days it was coasters. It was around this coast, France, Belgium, Holland, and one trip down to the Canary Islands of South America.
Do you know the name of the coaster?
Coasters, yes. One was the Acer Eldridge, and the other one was the Dashwood. There was two of them. And the deep sea one was the St. Elwyn. That was South America and back.
And tell us a bit about the work. What was it like being a steward on one of these coasters then?
No, not so much the coasters, because you've got no passengers on them.
So what were you doing on there then?
We were looking after the waiting on the crew and the galley, waiting on the officers in the crew and the galley, working over, helping the cook.
And what was it? Did you enjoy it?
Oh yes, it was very good. You saw places which you normally didn't see, like South America. You know, it was something out of the way. You know, right the way down.
And it's an experience you enjoyed.
Oh yes, yeah.
So what happens next then?
Well, I came out to do the army time because I had to stay here for 6 years. So if I didn't like it, I would have come out and they would have gone in the army. So I come out and did me army time, which was at the time was 18 months.
So that was what, 1949?
49, yeah, in October 49 I went in the army.
Now, so what was the call-up procedure, and how did you find all of the... I mean, I would have thought you'd gone into the Royal Navy, but you had to serve 6 years, did you, if you went in the...
If you were in the Merchant Navy and you didn't want to do the service time, you had to stay in the Merchant Navy for 6 years. Otherwise, you came out and you did your army time, so I did my army time.
Now, why not go into the Navy for 18 months?
At the moment, at the tat time, they didn't want to take you in the Navy for 18 months because they had enough volunteers. It was either Air Force or Army. And usually you found if you passed A1 in your medical exam, you were in the infantry.
Do you remember your medical at all?
I remember it, yes.
What was it like? How strict was it?
Oh, fairly strict. They had you all lined up and it sent you down from one person to the other and they tested you for all different things. And then you found out about the results afterwards and they gave you where to report, you know, at a certain date. And that was Shorncliffe Camp.
Now, who were you? Which regiment were you put in? Were you put in the Middlesex straight away?
No, I put in the Royal Fusiliers.
Now, was that their depot at the time, or what was
no,
it?
No, the Royal Fusiliers depot was a Tower of London.
So, why Shorncliffe Camp then?
Well, that's where they did all the conscripts for the West Kents, the East Surreys, and all the home counties training battalions.
So it's the home country's training depot?
It's home counties training depot, yeah.
Now, you sort of, when you were on your way there, you know, this was October?
October, yeah.
49. Now, what was your sort of reception when you got there? Because you go as a, you know, you've had some experience in life, obviously, but you are a civilian.
Oh,
and then
civilian.
You go through the gates and you're not. What was your, how were you received by the army the first few minutes, if you like?
They just lined you up and told you where you were going to sleep and what huts you were in on Shorncliffe Camp there. And after that, they issued you with uniforms the next day.
Was there lots of shouting and bawling, or was it quiet?
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of shouting and called your names and God knows what.
Swearing?
Oh, yeah, some swearing, yeah.
But not too bad?
Not too bad, no.
Were you used to swearing at all?
I'd heard it, so you took no notice of it in the end.
You heard it, but you didn't use it much?
Didn't use it, no.
And what about the kitting out next morning? What did they give you? Do you remember?
Yeah, you issued with boots, your uniform, underwear, greatcoat, and all the things you needed to wear, you know, tie, shirt, everything that you more or less wanted. If it needed alterations, then you went to the tailor and needed the alterations.
And what about your room? Is it a hutted camp? Or
it was a hutted camp at the time.
What was your hut like?
It was just an ordinary rounded roofed Nissen hut.
Can you describe how it's laid out and what it was like inside there?
It was just one door either end, with bunks down either side and the windows near the bunks. So you had your locker and the bunk, locker and the bunk all the way down either side. And that was about it.
Now we look at training by looking at sort of daily routine. Mm. How would your day start?
You start with the valley, you get up, wash, shave, and then you were out onto parade.
What about the breakfast? Well, in fact, can we talk about the food you'd get generally in the day? How did the food strike you compared to your mum's cooking, sort of thing? or the Merchant Navy cooking?
Yeah, you know? No, the food wasn't all that much.
What was wrong with it?
I don't know, it just wasn't, let's put it this way, it just wasn't home cooking, was it? It was just mass cooking. It was just there, dumped on your plate, you had no choice, and that was it. You went out and had it.
Was it worse than you had in the Merchant Navy?
Oh, yeah, a lot worse.
Mm. Why? Because that wasn't home cooking either, but...
No, yeah, but you had one chef doing the cooking. It wasn't... He did the cooking because he did the same for the officers as he did for the men. And the same with the liners, too, if you were right, you ate the same as them.
So not terribly good. Now after your breakfast, what would the training sessions be?
It could be marching, learning how to march and keep time.
Now how did you do with drill? I mean, some people can't do it.
Not too bad. You get the odd ones who couldn't do it, but usually you fall into the way of it, and it came natural after that.
How did you react to it? Do you enjoy it or dislike it or what?
I enjoy some of it, but rifle ranges at Hythe. There's nothing like being on them on a drizzly day, being as miserable as that. But the actual, other than that, was all right. They had a lot of running about.
No, I mean the actual drill. Did you enjoy a drill?
Well, their drill was all right, yeah.
I mean, you could do it. Did you understand why you had to do so much of it at the time?
Well, you didn't understand it. You knew that they wanted you to march all together and in unison. But if you were a bit, as you put it, out with step and how you turn left and right, maybe put your rifle above your head and belt you around a couple of times with your holding your rifle, and then you come back. So that taught you now to be a bit better.
Now what about, say, PT? How much PT, physical training, do you do? What types?
Oh, you just get running over the bars, like gymnasium bars and all that sort of thing. But that's about as much as I can remember.
Assault course?
You've got an assault course, yes, over the rough bits and the fences and through the mud. You've got all that. Yeah.
You're all right.
You're all right, yeah.
Now, what about weapons training? Take me through that. What weapons were you training on?
The Shortley Enfield.
What do you remember your training on
303.
That?
303. Oh, they were all right, down onto the, as I said, Hythe Beaches, which is all shingle. But they're miles of shingle there. They fire out to sea with the bunkers facing out to sea. So if anything missed or whatever, the top you went out to see, it did no harm. But
and how did you do on the rifle? What sort of a shot were you?
I wasn't a crack shot. I could hit the target at 200 yards, let's put it that way, pretty near the bore or just outside of it. But
did you get used to it quickly?
Yeah, you got used to it. They told you to hold your rifle tight on your shoulder, otherwise you bruise your shoulder and that sort of thing. To keep the rifle facing the front all the time.
Safety,
yeah. They've got all the safety points. So.
What about bayonet training? Did you do any of that?
We did a bit of that, yeah, with the sandbag held up.
What would you do?
Just run at it, screaming, and bang it in and through and on, and that's all. Yeah.
Very realistic, do you think?
No, I don't think it was all that realistic. You don't take a sandbag, you know, as a person. It's just training to you. Put it in the bag and wrap the other side.
What about shouting and shouting? You mentioned. Did you see the point in that?
Well, you can understand some of it because he wanted to keep you moving and doing what he wanted all the time, and it was orders, so you had to obey them or you took the consequences.
Now, other weapons, Bren gun.
Bren gun, yes.
What do you remember about that?
Well, he ended up as number one on that in Korea.
And so tell me how did they train you on it then?
Well, they taught you all about the Bren gun, how to take the bits, how to clean it, how to load it, and that was about it.
What about firing it?
Oh yeah, firing it all the time, yes.
From what was
the
it
hip,
like?
From the hip and from lying down.
What was it like to fire from the hip? Because a lot of people didn't do that.
It wasn't too bad actually. It didn't spin you around like some did. You just chatter and it just seemed to rock in your hip and you sprayed a bit in front of you.
Did you like the Bren gun? I mean, we'll talk about it in Korea, yeah. But did you like it when you first sort of met it?
Yeah, it was a nice weapon, yeah. I did like it.
What did you like about it? What was nice about it? What was good about it?
Well, you seem to be able to aim it better than you could the rifle, because you were on a tripod, so it kept it steady instead of on your elbows with a rifle.
So if you weren't firing from the hip, it was very accurate.
It was very accurate, yeah.
Anything else good about it? Was it reliable?
It was reliable, yeah, except if you got loaded incorrectly with one rim behind the other, then you've got a jam.
How difficult was it to pick clear jams?
It wasn't too difficult at all, because all you did is you whip one mag off and put a fresh one on.
So you didn't mess about?
You didn't mess about, no.
The bullet wouldn't get caught in the lock then?
It would get caught sometimes in the lock. You just pull it back and it would clear it.
So it was good for that?
It was good for that, yeah.
Now, the other weapon, what about a Sten gun?
No, we never attached a Sten gun. That was more or less for NCOs.
Any other weapons? Piet?
We had the Piet, yes.
What do you think of the Piet? You get to fire it.
I've got to fire it, yeah.
What do you think of it?
Not a lot.
Why not?
Unless you had a blooming great big spring and it would come back and hit you on the shoulder. And if you didn't hold it properly, it wouldn't recock itself. So you had to lie down and between your feet and, you know, do it that way. And it was a bit of a strain, they were.
Was it accurate?
As far as I remember, they were fairly accurate, yeah. Unless you've got a cartridge up in the fin that didn't go off, and then you had to clear out the way a bit quick, because they were very sensitive on the fuse on them.
Any other way? Oh, hand grenades.
Yeah, we did hand grenades as well, 36.
So what training did you get on? How do you train on the hand grenade?
Well, they taught you to stand in the butts, pull the pin, and throw it. And after about 4 seconds, it would go off. So you had to get your head down after that. You saw where it landed, and then you ducked your head down.
And was there did it make you nervous? Some people, I know there are stories of people dropping them in the trench and things.
Oh, like, yeah, some people would throw them up in the air and come back around where they live, down where they were standing. They said they have to go around the other side of the butts there to get out the way quick. Yeah.
Any of that happened when you were there?
Once, yeah. Just once, yeah.
But not you?
Not me, no, someone else. And they cleared out and ran the other side of the concrete and out the way. Very sharpish.
Any other weapons? I can't think of any.
No, I think nothing of weapons at all.
Now, how would you prepare for something? I mean, you know, we're talking about the bald side of things, you know. Mm. How would you prepare for a kit inspection? You're getting your uniform and your room and your bed ready for inspection.
Yeah, they were laid there every day anyway, your bed, and it had to be just so. But
so how would you lay your bed out?
Well, you had your clothes folded up, you had your haversack folded, and a lot of your kit, you know, just all in order on the bed, the same as everyone else.
They had a set layout?
They had a set layout, yes. Yeah.
And what about preparing your uniform, you know? What level of ball did you go to?
You had to blanko your equipment.
What's that? What does that mean? Can you explain what it means?
Yeah, it's like a wet dust you put over your webbing, wasn't it? They call it blanko. So it could come off on your uniform, because it was a dry one. It dried afterwards. But it just put like a khaki coating to your webbing equipment. And the rest of it you had to iron your shirts, iron your trousers, put your pleats in the back of your tunic, and all that.
What about your boots? It's always a big thing. How did you get your boots ready?
You had two pairs of boots. One was for best for parades and one was for training. So the boots, the best ones were polished caps. Yeah, spit and polish.
Now, how do you actually do that? Can you explain it? Because people don't know, have they?
Yeah. Well, you had a piece of cloth you wrapped around your finger, dipped it in the polish, and then spit the boot and rub it round and round. And this could go on for quite a bit. Spit and polish until you had a gleam on it. But that's the way it was done.
Did you mind the ball?
We used to get a bit fed up with it sometimes, because we used to pick too much of it.
What about preparing your room? I mean, did you have to clean the room to a ridiculous level?
You had to
level?
Keep it all tidy.
Oh, so just tidy?
Tidy, yeah.
So not too bad?
Not too bad, no.
Now, how did you get on with the other lads? You know, the other recruits. Where were they from? Oh, yeah. How did you get on with them?
Well, they were all from the home counties, and you more or less all got on all well together, because you all mucked in together. So, you know, you got on with them quite well. I don't remember any upsets with any of them.
No bullies, then?
No bullies, no. As far as I remember, they never had bullies.
Did you make any special friends amongst them?
Yeah, one or two. I've still got one of the clubbers in the same platoon with him all the way through.
What was his name?
Mulvaney.
Mulvaney.
Mulvaney. He's on the top of that list I gave you with a letter. He's chairman there now.
But what was he like then? Just give us a pic. When you first met him, because we'll probably see him now, and he'll not be quite so young, will he?
No, he hasn't really changed a lot. You know, you still recognise him if you saw him after all that time. Right now, you still recognise him. But he was a jolly sort of chap, you know, and he still is.
You got him right from the start.
Oh, yeah.
What about the NCOs? Well, the instructors, what were they like? I mean, how did they treat you?
Well, the sergeants that were usually strict, because they had to be. I don't remember a lot of the officers. Some of the corporals could be a bit, you know, a bit nasty sometimes.
In what way?
Well, they come along at 4 o'clock in the morning and say, "Why wake you all up and say, why aren't your windows open? You know, get you all out of bed, open out the windows." But they can be a bit naughty sometimes.
Did they bully you? Did it edge into that, or was it just, you know, the sort of game they play with the recruits?
Oh, well, I think it was just more as to keep you on your toes that they did it, yeah.
Were they fair?
I think they were fair in the, when you were trained. I think they were fair.
According to their lights,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Did they know their stuff? I mean, did you have confidence that when they were training you on something that they knew how to do it?
Oh, yeah, you could see they knew how to do it, yeah.
And the officers, you didn't see much of them, you said?
You didn't see much of the officers at that time, no.
Now, what about, so, you know, would you get to go to the canteen at all? I mean, did Shawcliffe have a canteen or entertainment?
Yeah, they had a naffy, yes, they had a naffy.
So what did the naffy canteen offer?
Well, just cakes, biscuits, or a cup of tea, and you could get a drink at some of them, I think. As I remember, you could get a beer.
Did you drink at them?
I don't remember drinking at that time. I didn't drink.
You're only 18.
Yeah, I didn't like a beer. I got a bit of sweet tooth, so it didn't appeal to me, more or less. Yeah.
And would the canteen have games or anything to do in there, or was it just a sort of
as far as I remember, they had table tennis and something like that. But I don't remember a lot about, you know, what went on in there.
Now, were you allowed out into what's the nearest town?
Nearest town was Folkestone.
Sorry.
Yeah, Folkestone.
Were you allowed out into Folkestone?
Oh, yeah, we could go out into Folkestone.
So
yeah.
What would you do what would you do on a trip to Folkestone?
Well, you could go down the seafront or into a cafe or something down there and have a mess about on the beach. But
so just almost like a tourist?
Just almost like a tourist, yeah.
Any trouble with the local lads? There can be sometimes.
No, we didn't have any trouble with the locals at all.
You didn't go to the dance halls and things like that?
No, we didn't went to dance halls. So.
Now, how long were you doing this training? From October?
3 months.
So it'd be to January?
To January, yeah. Then we had another...
Now, was there a passing out or parade?
There was a passing out parade,
what
yeah.
What do you remember about that?
Just that it was just one big parade. The soldiers had their parents come down to see them pass out, and that was about it, more or less. Just the parade, and
not particularly special.
Not particularly special, no. Because we got another, I think it was 6 weeks training after that, because we were going to Hong Kong.
Now, so you had your continuation training.
Yeah,
the
continuation
same
training, yeah, because they were expecting trouble in Hong Kong with the Chinese, weren't they, at the time?
And what was you? What sort of things were you doing on continuation then?
Well, more or less the same as you had in the ordinary training. That's all I remember, really. You've got more or less the same thing you had in the ordinary training, except they're a bit stricter on it. And you did different kinds of training, you know, like battle training and all that.
What would battle training be? That's tactics, isn't it?
Tactics, yeah.
Tell us about that,
tactics.
Then.
Well, you did, say, one person, one lot were enemy, and then you had to take their positions or charge their positions, so it gave you some idea, you know, what really went on.
We're learning how to sort of lay out, you know.
Yeah, learning how to lay out, dig a trench and that sort of thing.
How realistic do you think it was?
Not all that realistic.
Why not?
Well, because you couldn't envision at the time, you know, what was going to actually happen with that sort of thing. So, to you, it was just training, and that which is all you took it for.
Anything else about your training there, you know, the last month? Or was it just more of it?
Just more of it, that's all. I don't remember anything.
So you'd be there, what, till February?
Till a bit longer than February, I think, because we went to Hong Kong in about March, I think it was.
So just an extra 5 or 6 weeks.
Weeks, yeah.
Tucked on the end.
End, yeah.